So tonight it's anyway, it's the Wednesday night experience, the big book, and we are on working with others, and we are on the page 93. We've taken two meetings just to cover these four or five pages. We're only going to cover a few pages tonight. There's so much information in this chapter. I don't know that a lot of people read it who are new, but it's really how, when you're a new person, how things should be presented to you and how what you can do when you're working with someone, and then if you're the person who's working with the new person, what they did, and see how that might be different than the way we do it today. And that may be why it's a different success rate, I don't know. Also, when they met with someone, they were pretty beaten down in those days, and it was a whole different world in 1935 to 39. But this information is so powerful, and it really ties together a lot of the spiritual principles that are throughout the book. And we're going to pick it up on the bottom of page 93. It says, your prospect may belong to a religious denomination. His religious education training may be far superior to yours. It's probably true in a lot of cases. In that case, he's going to wonder how you can add anything to what he already knows. Now, here's a new word I hadn't seen before, knows. Remember, it's what we thought we knew when we came in here that was killing us. Those are old ideas. But he will be curious to learn why his own convictions have not worked. Well, obviously not, or else he wouldn't be in the situation he was in. And why yours seem to work so well. Because at this point, you've already told him what happened to you, what you were like, how you drank, how your life was falling apart, how you found the solution, and things have changed. And he may be an example of the truth. Now, look at the word truth, that faith alone is insufficient. And I think we know that, especially belief. We talk a lot about people come in, they say, well, I believe in God, and they even pray a lot, and then their lives are still unmanageable. Because belief in God won't develop into faith unless you take action, and then faith implies trust in God. And so if you just have belief, you may not have trust, and then you manage the world yourself. Anybody relate to that? Mm-hmm. To be vital means necessary for life. Faith must be accompanied by self-sacrifice and unselfish constructive action. And I've recently been studying the book of James again, and there's a whole chapter on that. Faith must be accompanied by self-sacrifice and unselfish constructive action. And it say in the book, faith without works is dead. So if your faith isn't accompanied by self-sacrifice and you're not doing unselfish constructive action, then your faith is basically dead. And it says, let him see that you're not there to instruct him in religion. Admit that he probably knows more about it than you do, but call to his attention the fact that however deep his faith and knowledge, he could not have applied it or he would not drink. Now, that's a key point. However deep his faith and knowledge were or how deep he thought they were, he couldn't apply it. And if we can't apply our relationship with God to our life, then nothing changes. And so if we don't do that, then we're left with ourselves. Perhaps your story will help him see where he has failed to practice the very precepts he knows so well. We represent no particular faith or denomination. We are dealing only with general principles common to most denominations. Now, here's a really important line, and I really wonder how many people can actually do this and how well this is actually being done, because this is how they approached a new person. They outlined the program of action. Could you do that? Could you outline your program of action? Explaining how you made a self-appraisal, what you actually did, how you straightened out your past and why you're now endeavoring to be helpful to him. That's a good question. You might ask yourself, and you might write it out. How could you outline the program? How would you outline the program? I could do it again. I've done it a million times. You don't want to hear it again, so I'm not going to do it tonight. But It's an important thing, because if you can outline the program of action, it means you're actually doing it. It means you're actually doing this. You know what's involved. It's important for him to realize that your attempt to pass on to him plays a vital part in your own recovery. There's the word vital again. They don't mince words here. Necessary for life, vitae. That's what it's from. So passing him on is a vital part of my own recovery. Why? It gets me out of self. I'm not self-centered. I'm working for somebody else. Plus, the more I work with somebody else, the more I'm in my first step. The more I can admit that I need help in my powerlessness. And then the more, when I work with someone, the more I can see about how my self-centeredness affected my life and still does today, and how I can work 6 and 7. So it's very vital. Make it plain, actually he may be helping you more than you're helping him. I think that's been true for me in some situations. Make it plain he has no obligation to you, that you hope only that he will try to help other alcoholics when he escapes his own difficulties. I like this, escapes his own difficulties. It doesn't say when he escapes his problems, it's his own difficulties, which we know, right? Our problems are of our own making, they arise out of myself, where self will run riot. Now here's another line I like. Suggest how important it is that he place the welfare of other people ahead of his own. And so you could say to yourself, what's God's will for me? To place the welfare of people ahead of me. This could be, and it's the opposite of a self-centered person. It's a God-centered view. Make it clear that he's not under any pressure, that he needn't see you again if he doesn't want to. You should not be offended if he wants to call it off, for he has helped you more than you've helped him. Now, here's some requirements that I have to remember. If your talk has been sane, so you're not screaming and yelling at him, tell you what's wrong with him, calling him names, quiet and full of human understanding, you have perhaps made a friend. I'm being silly, but you know, it's very hard to be quiet, full of human understanding, and sane. That requires you having peace and serenity when you present the message, and that you be God-centered when you're talking to him. Maybe you've disturbed him about the question of alcoholism. That's a good point. We probably ruin people's drinking when they come here. This is all to the good. Now here's another line that I didn't see before. The more hopeless he feels, the better. Hopelessness is a powerful thing to drive us to change. And the more hopeless we feel, the more powerless, the more defeated, the more pain, the more humiliation, the more we'll be willing to change and do something. But we offer hope, so hopelessness is a state of mind that's not really the truth. You can be hopeless and come in here, but you really aren't hopeless. Your mind tells you you are, but we have hope for you. We have a plan of action. He will be more likely to follow your suggestions. And so you see that all the time. People come in here and they're very hopeless. They're crying, they're a mess. They got the wristband, DUI card, whatever. They have no place to live, they have no car, and they're very hopeless. And a week later they get the car back, the armband's gone, things are a little better, and they're less hopeless. So hopeless and is something that is related to my moment of defeat. And so I think it's very important to keep my first step alive and remember that moment of complete defeat. And to remember how powerless I am all the time, to manage my life and to be free of the obsession, the drink. I have no power. Your candidate may give reasons why he need not follow all the program. I'm sure that's never happened before. Yeah, some people read the steps off the wall. They'll come to me and they'll say, I really like these, but I don't want to do 5. Or I don't want to do 9, you know. They write them, they're doing them on the wall. New people come in, they take the steps off the wall, and they figure out which ones are going to do and not do. He may rebel. Now notice they say, they're not talking about meetings here. They're not talking about, in this, when you're talking to a new person, they're talking about following the program, taking the steps of recovery. He may rebel at the thought of a drastic house cleaning, which requires discussion with other people. Some people don't want to do that. They think it's scary. Why? Because they have a fear of not being good enough, fear of failure, fear of not being approved. So they're scared to admit to another person what the truth is. But we get over that because we come across as someone who's considerate. We've been through it ourselves. We're offering compassion, understanding. It says, tell him you once felt as he does, but you doubt whether you would have made much progress had you not taken action. So you see throughout this page 94, they're implying that the person who's working with the new person has done the deal, that they've taken the steps. On your first visit, tell him about the fellowship of AA. And then here it is, if he shows interest, lend him your copy of this book. Why? Why would you want to lend them the copy of the book? Because the book is what they wrote, which is the specific directions of recovery, and it's their experience and testimony on what they did. So this is all we really have to offer the new person, is our experience, and this was their experience and what they did, and if you want what they had, you do what they did. Well, that's all we offer in AA, is our experience. And then we ask you to do what we did and tell us what your experience is. And then if your experience is positive, then you'll help somebody else. And then they'll do what you did, and then they'll have their experience. And that's how we're all here today, passing it one to another. And then it says, unless your friend wants to talk further about himself, do not wear out your welcome. Give him a chance to think it over. I know that's probably dangerous, to let an alcoholic think it over. But we don't want to force them to do something. They have to have, we're going to read it, they have to have the desire within them. It has to be something they want. The mistake I make is I want some people to recover more than they do. And so, because why? Because I feel good, and this has worked for me, so I want them to get it. But we can't give them the desire. We can't give them the willingness. If you do stay, let them steer the conversation any direction he likes. Sometimes a new man is anxious to proceed at once, and you may be tempted to let him do so. This is sometimes a mistake. If he has trouble later, he's likely to say you rushed him. Alcoholics always have an excuse if things don't work out right. You hear all the time, I went to AA, it didn't work. Well, they went to some meetings, and they didn't do anything, any of the steps, and it didn't work. Well, of course it didn't work, because they didn't do it. I still remember, it was so powerful. I was taking care of this guy. He couldn't stop drinking. And he was getting over his cancer. I said, you're going to get better. Now, we might want to work on your not drinking. And he says, well, I went to that A&A. But he says, I just didn't like it. I said, why? He said, too many prayers, too much God. So I said, well, how's your life working? And, you know, I was his physician. I wasn't his sponsor or anything. I just said, well, you might try it. You might have a different attitude. And then you know what? He died a week later. He fell down the steps drunk in his house. It was really powerful because I could still hear him saying, you know, I don't want to talk about that God. Too much praying, the Lord's Prayer and all that stuff. And it was really sad. He wasn't that old. You will be most successful with alcoholics if you do not exhibit any passion for crusade or reform. Sometimes that's hard because we feel so strongly about this thing. We have to be careful how we present it. Here's another one. Never talk down to an alcoholic from any moral or spiritual hilltop. I have to remember that. We're supposed to walk path by path, hand by hand. We're not really in front of everybody. We're not higher or lower. We're all trusted servants. And we have to remember the sponsor-sponsee relationship is not one of above and hard. It's horizontal. We're equal. We're not better or worse than anybody. We're all alcoholics. We all have the same fatal disease. And it says, simply lay out the kit of spiritual tools for his inspection. Well, that's the steps. Do you remember where else that's in the book? Simple kit of spiritual tools. Page 25. It's one of my favorite lines. So I guess I'll read it again. Too bad for you guys. Here you go. Page 25, it's in this, there is a solution. It's a very clever page. It's hidden in the book, and it says, there is a solution. And it says, but we had saw that it really worked in others, and we had come to believe in the hopelessness of futility of life as we've been living it. So if you've come to believe in the hopelessness and futility of life as we've been living it, then you're constitutionally capable of being honest with yourself. You can see the truth of your situation. If you can see that, then when you're approached by those in whom the problem is solved, there's nothing left but to pick up the simple kit of spiritual tools laid at our feet. So people who don't want to pick up this kit of spiritual tools, they can't really see the hopelessness. They haven't come to believe in the hopelessness and futility. Now, we know their life is hopeless and futile, but they don't believe it yet. And if an alcoholic doesn't believe something yet, they're not going to give up. But when you believe in it, that means you can see the truth about your situation. Did anybody have that moment when you could see the absolute truth about your situation? You were done. You were licked. You were completely defeated. I could still see it. I could still see the moment when it came through my mind that I was completely done. I just didn't want to do it anymore. I was done. I couldn't fix my life. I said, I'm going to do whatever they say. I got to get help. And then I asked God for help. It shows, show them how they work for you. So you have to be able to tell someone how these kit of spiritual tools are working for you, how they work for you. Show him, offer him friendship and fellowship. Tell him if he wants to get well, you will do anything to help. But I wrote this thing, I heard it in a meeting, probably heard it before, but you know, I don't listen well. And somebody says, we carry the message, but we don't carry the alcoholic. Mm-hmm. And we have to remember that. Especially people who are people pleasers and people who want approval, people who are caregivers, people who are codependent. We have to be careful not to set boundaries. We don't carry them. We carry the message. And sometimes it's very hard. Sometimes it's hard to do that. I was having trouble and I talked to my friend Bruce from Minnesota. He says, you need to go to Al-Anon. I said, you're probably right, because I was having trouble setting boundaries and I could see it. And he was serious. I mean, he meant it well, and that's what Al-Anon talks about. We talk about here in our program, it's just in a different context. If he expects you to act only as a banker for his financial difficulties or a nurse for his sprees, you may have to drop him until he changes his mind. This he may do after he gets hurt some more. See, they make the point again. It's the pain. It's the suffering. It's the humiliation, the complete defeat that's going to drive the new person to be willing to do the deal, to change his mind about God, to make a decision to turn his life over to God. It says, so I wrote pain-humility-willingness. And it's that moment of complete defeat, which I call, I said, when I was humbled by the disease or surrendered, I was surrendered by the disease, that we let God in. I believe that's true. God's always there, but I believe we get the grace of God at that moment when we're completely defeated. And he gives us the ability to see the truth, and then the grace comes in. I don't know if anybody can relate. And I felt better immediately when I asked God for help. I felt like I was on the way. If he's sincerely interested and wants to see you again, ask him to read this book in the interval. And after doing that, he must decide for himself whether he wants to go on. So some people say they give the book to somebody to read. It's a hard book to read on your own, especially if you're new. I've learned that, and that you can read them with them. I have the site now. I'm not saying it's good or bad, but you can listen to at least somebody read the book. That's why I did it, so I could read the book with people. And so you can read it, and you can hear someone go through it. I've been studying the Bible, and I used to read it by myself, but now I'm listening to this audio study, and I'm getting so much more out of it. It's kind of like this. They go line by line, and somebody really knows the deal. And it's been really helpful to me. Here's some great lines. He should not be pushed or prodded by you, his wife, or his friends. Sometimes I push because I want it so bad for them. But sometimes we have to back off. And they have to decide what they're going to do and when they want to do it. If he is to find God, the desire must come from within. What else could be more true from that? And it has to come from within. It can't come from me or wife or external. And it has to come from within. And we talk about that surrender, that moment of defeat inside. If he thinks he can do the job in some other way or prefers some other spiritual approach, encourage him to follow his own conscience. And so I wrote own conscience versus conscious contact. Sometimes an alcoholic following his own conscience is following his own self-will. And so, but we can't tell them that. And so it's hard to give up on your own way. And so we have no monopoly on God. That's true. We merely have an approach that works with us. That's all this is. We're not saying this is the only way, but we say this is the program of recovery for AA. AA is the 12 steps. AA has a solution. There may be other solutions. We're not saying that. But we're saying if you want what we have, do this solution and see if it works for you. Now, we say rarely will anybody fail who follows this path thoroughly. And so try it. AA is an experiment. We don't tell anybody what they have to do. We just say, if your life's a mess and you want to change, do this and tell us the result. I can't tell you what the result's going to be for you. I can just tell you what it was for me. And that's what our testimony. And then you do it and see. And remember, the result of this is an experience. It's a spiritual awakening. It's an experience. You experience something happening in your life that's changing the way you see things and the way you think and the way you act. And you couldn't have done that on your own power. And you say, wow, something's going on. And you say, I better keep doing this. It says, but point out that we alcoholics have much in common, that you would like in any case to be friendly. Let it go at that. And, you know, we talk about that. If you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then are you ready to take certain steps? It says, do not be discouraged if your prospect does not respond at once. Now, Joe and Charlie said that this was the instructions on sex inventory. It's on page 69, and somebody thought it was page 96. So they read this, and it says, do not be discouraged if your prospect does not respond at once. Search out another alcoholic and try again. You know, it's funny the first time, but all right, everybody laugh. Now let's go on. It says, do not be discouraged. I have to not be discouraged if my prospect does not respond at once. We can't get our own motives. Our only motives are to serve God and to be of help and service. And we're not responsible for the results, right? We're not responsible for what happens. We have no power. Search out another alcoholic and try again. You're sure to find someone desperate enough to accept with eagerness what you offer. So that once again, they're talking about desperation, and desperation produces eagerness. You can tell how desperate a person is by how eager they are to do when you suggest things and how quick they are to do them. Remember, it says on page 22, I believe, I'm getting old. No, page 20. It says, you may have already asked yourself, why it is that all of us became so very ill from drinking? You're reading this. You're the reader. Doubtless, I'm curious to discover how why, in the face of expert opinions, the contrary, they had recovered from a hopeless condition of mind and body. You would want to know, right? And it says here, if you're an alcoholic who wants to get over it, anybody in here? Then it says you'd already be asking, what do I have to do? Cindy Beach says that's the only question you should really have if you're a newcomer. What do I do? What do I need to do, and what do I need to do next? And it says it's the purpose to answer these questions. That's why we study it. All right, so I'll go back to page 96. It says, we find it a waste of time to keep chasing a man who cannot or will not work with you. I had somebody just sitting here, I don't know, 6 weeks ago, 8 weeks ago, they really wanted help. They wanted me to sponsor. I gave my number. I went to some meetings. We did some work together. And then they stopped returning my calls. And I tried a few times, but I didn't try more than that. If they know where I am, they'll get me. But it's very sad. We feel really sad when that happens. But you know what? It helps me. It helps me remember my first step. It helps me how I'm powerless, too. If he leaves, he may become convinced that he cannot recover by himself. Step one, to spend too much time on any one situation is to deny some other alcoholic an opportunity to live and be happy. So here's what we offer people with the 12 steps, an opportunity to live and be happy. Who wouldn't want that? That's all we're doing. One of our fellowship failed entirely with his first half dozen prospects. He often says that if he continued to work on them, he might have deprived many others who have since recovered of their chance. So remember, it says we should not regret the past nor shut the door on it. A lot of people say, well, what does that mean? Well, because our past may be the key to someone's survival. Sharing our past, sharing what it was like for us, what happened to us, what it's like now, can help somebody else. Suppose you're now making your second visit to a man. He has read this volume and says he's prepared to go through with the 12 steps of the program of recovery. Having had the experience yourself, you can give him much practical advice. We're supposed to give advice practical on what we did. Let him know you're available if he wishes to make a decision and tell his story. But do not insist upon if he prefers to consult someone else. So that them, the way they put working the steps is the decision and telling your story, going through steps 4 and 5. You say, step 4 and 5, you're actually telling your life story as self-centered, your life story separated from God, your life of resentment, fear, and your shame and guilt and the harm you did others. He may be broken, so I wrote on the con, that is what we're supposed to do. He may be broken, homeless. If he is, you might try to help him about getting a job or give him a little financial assistance. You might tell him to get a job. But you should not deprive your family or creditors of money you should have, they should have. Perhaps you will want to take the man into your home for a few days, but be sure you use discretion. Be certain he will be welcomed by your family. He is not trying to impose upon you for money, connections, or shelter. So what are his motives? Are his motives to use you to get out of the bad situation, or is he really trying to recover from this condition? And remember, it was a different world then. You know, they took people in their houses before they took them to the meetings. The sponsor in those days took you to the hospital, and some of them paid for it. It was a whole different world in 1935. Mm-hmm. No airplanes, no Snapchat or whatever that is, Twitter, Facebook, telephones. People didn't have telephones. They didn't have cars. And so they lived nearby. And so they saw each other, and it was a different world. Permit that, you only harm them. But it's true today. What are they using you for? What are they trying to get? What are their motives? And then what are your motives? Make sure your motives are good. You were making it possible for him to be insincere. So I wrote, set boundaries. Don't be codependent. Don't be a people pleaser when you're working with an alcoholic. It said you may be aiding in his destruction rather than his recovery. I wrote, you can kill with kindness. The gift of desperation causes action. And so if we take away his desperation, he may not take the action. There is a thought that the alcoholic has to hit that level himself. You can't really prevent. You can try to protect him economically, but in the end, you can't. I had to do that with my son. I was powerless to help him. If I gave him money, that wouldn't have helped. If I gave him things, it wouldn't have helped. Never avoid these responsibilities, but be sure you're doing the right thing if you assume them. Remember, we go to God all the time. What are our motives? God guide us. God lead us. What's God's will for me? Give me his will for me and the power to carry that out, especially when working with others. Now, here's a line that a lot of people quote. It's great. Helping others is the foundation stone of your recovery. Now, it doesn't say alcoholics, does it? Helping others. Help others, all walks of your life. Are you helping others? Are you turning your thoughts to those you can help? Are you turning those to serve? To me, that's really God's will for me, how I can be of service to God, him, and others. And we read tonight, we're studying, what's the role God assigns to me? To be trusted servant, to be of loving and tolerant and serving him and others in all areas of my life. And a kindly act once in a while isn't enough. You have to act the Good Samaritan every day if you need be. So that's a powerful line. It may be the loss of many nights' sleep, great interference. And then you're not doing the kind acts for recognition now, right? You're doing the kind acts to serve God and to help others. And you can give a person a chance for life who could be dying. And then you talk about the Good Samaritan law in medicine. You know, if somebody's injured and you go and help them, you know, you're not... You know, there's no legal ramifications of doing that in an emergency. You can lose sleep, great interference with your pleasures, interruptions to your business, goes on and on and on. Telephone may jangle, wife may be neglected, they're going to drunk, smash furniture, whatever. Occasionally, we have to meet such conditions. They even talk, and I'm going to end soon. We seldom allow an alcoholic to live in our homes for a long time. Probably a good idea. It's not good for him, and it sometimes creates serious complications in a family. Then here's a paragraph where they talk about if the alcoholic doesn't respond, you shouldn't neglect his family. See how they worked with others? In fact, a lot of times the wives went to the meetings before the patient, the alcoholic did. and that they should they accept and practice spiritual principles, there's a much better chance that he will recover. They may deal with their own resentments and fears. And then I'm just grieved for the type of alcoholic who is able and willing to get well. Little charity in the ordinary sense of the word is needed or wanted. I'm just going to read a few lines, and then we'll go back to this next week. It says on the second paragraph, the minute we put our work on a service plane, the alcoholic commences to rely upon me rather than upon God. And it says, some of us have learned hard knocks, true job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of dependence on God. How's that? And then here it is, burn. You're going to burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that you can get well regardless of anyone. And here's the condition, trust in God and clean house. Powerful stuff. So we'll pick it up next week on page 98, and we'll go through that. So thank you, and see you next week.